A Midwestern boy shares amazing tales of life in Hollywood and many places in the wild world of golf on this, the newest episode of Musings on Golf. Along with Jenna Self, our executive producer, who is quickly rediscovering her passion for the game and prowess on the course, I am Kelly Elbin, welcoming you to our show. Oh, and are you ever going to have fun listening to former PGA Tour player Jay Delsing, whose new book, You Wouldn't Believe Me If I Told You, an unforgettable memoir of golf, grit, and a blue-collar kid on the PGA Tour, is out, and it is chock full of one great story after another. After the interview with Jay, I have a few thoughts in regards to Tiger Woods' most recent surgery. And wasn't it fun to see Xander Schauffele get back in the winner's circle after a 15-month victory drought? Last time Xander Schauffele won was the 2024 Open Championship at Troon. And he was back in Japan and a lot of family there for him and was very, very cool. Jay Delsing, a lot of what you're going to hear and through the book, he reminds me somewhat of Gary McCord in terms of his wit. And he also reminds me of Gary McCord in the fact that neither one of them won on the PGA Tour, even though they played a very long time. In the case of Jay Delsing, he played 565 PGA Tour events. His best finish was a runner-up at the 93 New England Classic and the 95 FedEx St. Jude Classic. St. Louis, bred and born, has returned there, and really his life has always revolved around Missouri and St. Louis. But what is so great about this book is he had an opportunity, accepted a scholarship at UCLA, and played on some teams with some outstanding players: Corey Pavin, Steve Pate, Tom Pernice Jr., Duffy Waldorf. He was on teams that won two Pac-10 team titles, and he's somewhere like 15th in PGA Tour history in terms of number of holes in one that he's made in competition. I think he's made somewhat like five holes in one in competition. Jay also hosts a weekly podcast and a radio show on 101 ESPN Sports Talk for St. Louis called Golf with Jay Delsing. In this book, what I really have a lot of fun with is the names that you're going to hear. James Bond, or at least one of the gentlemen who portrayed James Bond, John Daly. The foreword is written by Jack Nicklaus, which Jay explains how that happened. That's pretty good to have a guy who never won on the PGA Tour having the foreword of his book written by arguably the greatest golfer of all time. And then in addition to the fun stuff that you hear about Hollywood and Daly, you'll hear some other tidbits from his time on the PGA Tour. 565 tour events is a long time. I know that he's a good player who's had a solid career, great guy, and I think you'll really, really enjoy this interview with Jay Delsing. Oh, and by the way, his father, as you'll find out, was a Major League Baseball player. So there's a lot to this. Have fun and enjoy hearing from Jay Delsing right after these words from our friends at William & Harry and Titleist. Golf fans, are you ready to wear your pride? William & Harry's limited edition Spirit Shoe is here just in time to celebrate the Ryder Cup and to help you feel like you're part of Team USA, cheering on every shot. Two bold designs, premium deerskin, spikeless traction, 100% waterproof, and all-day comfort from tee to green and beyond. Limited production. When they're gone, they're gone. Rebuy now at WilliamAndHarry.com. Get into spirit. Get into comfort.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee. More control with your irons. More spin with your wedges. And more opportunity to shoot your lowest score.
Well, from the heartland of America to the entertainment capital of the world and all over the map, for 25 years on the PGA Tour, our special guest today has lived a fascinating life that he happily shares in his new book, You Wouldn't Believe Me If I Told You, an unforgettable memoir of golf, grit, and a blue-collar kid on the PGA Tour. I have read a lot of this book. I love this book. So, and even the chapter names are fantastic. Great stuff from Jay Delsing. Jay, welcome to Musings on Golf.
Oh, Kelly, great to be with you. You know what we were shooting for, Kelly, was the longest title in golf. So we're close. I mean, I don't know if we're going to get there, but we're really close.
If it's not official, you're very, very close to it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if anybody gives a damn about that sort of stuff, Kelly, or keeps track of it, but we got to be in the top five.
Like the word unforgettable, because I think it's true. A lot of times when you, Jay, when you decide to put down your thoughts on your career, right? Particularly for a golfer, it can be how I played in a particular event, but you're way outside the box. And I think the great storytelling is what it's all about. That's what people, I believe, really enjoy hearing.
Well, thanks, Kelly. Yeah. Well, you know, golf's esoteric enough and it's slow enough for some people. And you know, my take on golf and what I want people to know about the game is that it's a uniter. It brings people together. It raises ridiculous amounts of money. I read an article not long ago, Kelly, that the economic blueprint from a charitable standpoint for golf this year was going to be over $4 billion. It's just the most giving of all the sports. In my opinion, it's the greatest of all sports, but it brings people together in untold ways. You know, you play golf with someone, Kelly, in 18 holes, you got a damn good chance of being that guy or that woman's friend for the rest of your life. And it's not like that in any other sports.
No, it's really not. And it's one of the great things. I was head of communications for the PGA of America for a dozen years. And the PGA talks a lot about a lot of things in terms of golf. Of it can be camaraderie. It can be competition. It can be family. It can be, as you said, making new friends. It is a unique sport that, right? And Jay, even at the elite level where you spent a quarter of your life.
No, absolutely. And I think one of the things that is so special about the PGA Tour is the pro-am situation, Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely differentiated between us and any other sports because someone got to play with Tiger Woods and someone got to play with Jack Nicklaus in the pro-am. And, you know, you're not going to get have a tennis hit with Skinner or, you know, those guys, you're not going to get to play horse with Michael Jordan, and you're not going to get to try to hit a Shohei Ohtani curveball. You know, it's just not happening. But you get to play golf, and you're putting on the same greens, the same holes and things like that as some of the greats right before they get to compete. And so, in my opinion, that's the thing that golf has that the others don't. And you get to walk those fairways and get to hang out with some of the greatest golfers of all time. That's a pretty special experience for folks.
No question about it. I spent a little bit of time with Will Salisbury, who co-wrote this book along with you and had a lot of fun talking with him about putting it together with you. But before we delve too deeply into this, Jay, what inspired you to even want to do a book to begin with?
This is all Will's fault. Since Will's not here today, we're blaming him. Will is a dear, dear friend. I love this guy. And he just stayed on me. This is going to be, you know, we'd sit around and have a tequila or a pop or something. And we'd start telling stories and, you know, he'd kind of get me wound up a little bit and I would start telling stories. And he's like, you got to put that in the book. I'm like, come on, dude, just, you know, let's just be a couple of guys here on a bar stool. This is fine. Let's just, and eventually I could see he wasn't going to stop. And so I'm like, okay, let's do this thing. We had an absolute blast doing it. It's a much longer, more difficult process, Kelly, than I could have imagined. It's eye-opening in so many ways because I love business. I own several businesses. It's really, really fun to kind of learn how the whole thing works. And once it's finished, you know, Kelly, there's this moment where they send you this finished product that it, up until then, it's just this weird thing in the back of your mind, like, are we really going to do this? Is this really thing going to ever take shape? I've read this stupid book, you know, 400 times trying to get all the typos, get the tenses out, get the golf vernacular, you know, straight, because it's odd. You know, when you're going with an editor who doesn't know much about golf, they're like, what's a green? And what are you talking about a tee? And who's a tee? You know, and what's on the tee mean? And it was their honor, you know. So all of our golf vernacular, all of the turns and things like that were much more challenging. I really didn't think much about that at the beginning, but writing the book was one thing, and then putting it all together with Amplified and Mascot Books, who were absolutely great with me, was really, really interesting. And it was sloggy, I'm not going to lie. There were times where I was like, man, are we ever going to get this thing to the finish line? But, you know, we did, and I'm grateful.
Okay, you are, as I said at the outset, from the heartland. So you're a St. Louis kid through and through. You still live there. You have your radio show. I believe you do a lot of podcast work as well. You mentioned some businesses that you're involved with. So let's go back to your late teens. St. Louis kid from the heartland goes to UCLA on a golf scholarship, plays golf there. Bel Air Country Club, you're introduced to, you know, one of the coolest places I would imagine in Los Angeles. And the people that you, Jay Delsing, get to meet, can we start out, first story, meeting Mr. Bond?
Yeah, so Kelly, you got to understand, my parents, I'm the fourth of five. Mm-hmm. So my parents kissed me at the curb of Lambert St. Louis Airport. I go to L.A. with two pair of shoes, one of them's golf shoes, a suitcase about this big, and my golf clubs. And they're like, whew, thank God we got rid of him, you know? So off I go. I'm going to LAX, which is a marginally terrifying airport anyway. And yeah. No one speaks English. It's like, you know, and I don't know one soul in Los Angeles, not one soul. And somebody is going to pick me up and take me to where I'm going to live, which I'm assuming is the dorms. Things were loose back then, man. There was no internet. There were no cell phones. It was just, you know, this communication via your house phone and the U.S. mail. So I'm standing there with my clubs, and a gentleman taps me on the shoulder. He goes, you look like you could be Jay Delsing. I'm like, yeah, I don't think anybody else in here wants to be me. Let's go. You know, come on, I'm going to take you to the place you live. So 15 minutes later, he drops me off in front of, literally, Kelly, a mansion. It was Lana Turner's old home. It's on the ninth tee of the Bel Air Country Club. He hands me a key and a list of about six, you know, instructions. And I'm like, what are we doing? Where are we? And he goes, well, this is where you live. And I go, no, I don't live here. Kelly, I grew up fourth of five kids, about 1,000 square foot house, one bathroom, three older sisters. This was not my scene. You know, I'm like, I could be the gardener here. I could be, you know, and so he's like, nope, this is your key. Mrs. McCulloch was the owner of the home. Her husband invented the chainsaw. They bought the London Bridge from the mayor of London and moved it to their marina in Lake Havasu, Arizona. And she's not home. And so I'm like, oh my gosh. So I take that on and I'm like, I've got my own room. I've got a walk-in closet. I've got my own shower, my own bathroom in my room. I'm like, wow, crazy. I'm okay. All right. I can handle all this. This is great. So I'm on the ninth tee of Bel Air Country Club. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to sneak out and play that dude all the time, trying to figure out how to play it. So Coach Marins, Eddie Marins, calls me up and says, get on up here and hit some putts. I want to watch you hit some putts. And I said, no, I've been in Los Angeles for 10 days or 2 weeks, Kelly. And so I'm like, okay, fine. So I go up there and I'm just kind of minding my own business and trying to take it all in. And so I'm standing on the putting green and I'm trying to take in Los Angeles and I'm completely clueless. I mean, I have no idea about Los Angeles. I just know the weather's beautiful. I've never seen a golf course like this with the canyons and all these palm trees and eucalyptus trees and mansions and all this other stuff. And I get a tap on the shoulder and I hear this unusual accent and say, young man, would you care to play nine holes of golf with me? And I turn around and it's Sean Connery. This is James Bond, 1979. I'm like, oh no, Mr. Connery, I'm not a member. I'm like, I don't even know what I'm doing here. And he goes, you're part of the UCLA golf team. And I said, yes, sir. And he goes, well, I just checked with the golf shop. They said it's fine. Do you want to play? And I'm like, hell yeah. So I run over, grab my clubs. And now I'm like a little puppy. You know, I'm James Bond. I mean, I'm with Sean Connery. So we go down, and this is the coolest man ever, Kelly. He just grabs his clubs. There's no caddy. He just grabs his clubs, and we walk off the tee. And, you know, not having any sort of life experiences at 18, I don't even know the questions to ask him. You know, I don't even know what to do. He starts asking me about golf, but this is where the game is what brings us together. And so after about the fourth hole, he goes, would you please quit calling me Mr. Connery? Just call me Sean. I'm like, yes, sir. And he goes, quit calling me, sir. You know, and I'm like, so do you like Los Angeles? Do you like it? And he goes, Los Angeles is it's a dump. I can't stay in Los Angeles. My wife didn't like, you know, but you know, I'm an actor. I love doing that. So this is where we are. And I love playing golf. And so we just carried on, and it was a blast. So we're walking up the ninth hole, and it is really getting dark. And I'm probably about 4 feet from the coolest man. I mean, man crush, the whole thing. The coolest man I've ever met. And I said to him, you know, I think we should play the back nine. And he said, I'm really struggling to see my ball now. I said, I am too. But, Sean, I don't want this day to end. This is the right goal for me, man. And he goes, well, you want to come in and have a beer with me when we're finished? No, I don't want to do that. Yeah, so of course I do. So this is really cool. So I'll set the scene. You exit the ninth green of Ballard Country Club, and you're in a canyon. You walk about 20 yards to the left and enter a tunnel. No lie. There's five or six tunnels at Ballard. You get to, and I'm following Sean. He presses the button. Elevator comes down. I've only been in this tunnel one other time, okay? Now I'm in the elevator. Second, I'm in the elevator, but he's taking me to the heart. This empties you into the middle of the men's locker room. Never been there. He tells me, take your clubs, put them over here. Yes, sir. Here, we're going to go this way and go have a drink in the men's grill. Fantastic. On our way over there, Kelly, he runs into two friends. And I am so starstruck. I'm like, this is Sean Connery. This is Sean Connery. He introduces me to two fellas and just says, this is the latest member of the UCLA golf team. He's from St. Louis, Missouri. This is Jay Delsing. Nice to meet you, sir. Yes or no, sir. We exchange a few presents, whatever. He says goodbye. We walk along, make a turn, and he stops me and he says, Jay, you probably should pay attention to those two guys, because he just introduced them as Steven and George. And he said, you should pay attention to those two fellas because they're really going to do some interesting things in Hollywood. It was Steven Spielberg and George Lucas. And at the time, now, Kelly, it's 1979, and I'm dumb. I mean, I don't know Steven Spielberg from Steven, my mailman. I'm like, I'm going to have beers with Sean Connery. And we go down and sit down. And so this whole thing, you know, just kind of throws in the back of my mind. And I'm sitting there having beers with Sean Connery. And he says to me, he goes, so do you know who Barbara Walters is? And I am don't want to be dumb, but of course I don't. And I said, yeah, sure. And he goes, well, good, because you can watch. I'm going to be with her this Saturday night. She's interviewing me, and I think you'll get a kick out of it. And you can Google this. And I'm like, okay, that's awesome. So this is the greatest day of my life. I have a couple of beers with the coolest man I've ever met. And I go back home, and Mrs. McCulloch is sitting there, and she goes, how was your day today, honey? And I said, it was great. I just played golf and had beer with Sean Connery. And she goes, Sean's such a nice man. And I'm like, so she knows him too. You know, I'm like, he really is. And I said, do you know who this person Barbara Walters is? And she goes, well, of course, she's a famous interview for ABC, and she does these interviews for you know, really noteworthy people. I said, oh, cool, because Sean's getting interviewed by her this Saturday. She goes, oh, well, cool, we'll watch together. So, Kelly, we're watching this, and you can Google this. Sean says throughout the course of the interview with Barbara Walters that every once in a while, every single woman deserves a good slap. And I was like, oh, I don't know about that one. But anyway, he didn't care. He just fired it out there. And I was like, oh, okay, let's go. Yeah. I mean, so the basic premise of the book, Kelly, is that, you know, when you were with your kids and you'd give them, you know, things to look at, there's a chair and a couch and here's a, you know, a coffee table. And then there's a giraffe. You know, And like, which one of these doesn't belong? I'm the giraffe in every one of these stories. I'm the thing that doesn't belong there, you know, playing with presidents of the United States or playing with, you know, I just don't belong there. We were playing at Pebble Beach one year. And you know how cool it is up there where they pop up those structures and here's a place to work out and here's where everybody gathers to eat. And so my routine was wake up, grab something to eat, get a workout in, stretch, and go play. So I'm just there early, minding my own business. And this young guy, he looks like he's 12 years old, says, hey, man, can I sit here? And I go, sure. Yeah, grab a seat. And I stand up, said, hey, I'm Jay. He goes, hey, I'm Justin. Hey, no problem, Justin. How you doing? We're just sitting there talking and visiting and everything is great. And we sit there for probably 15 or 20 minutes and I'm just got my oatmeal, whatever the hell it is. And he's doing the same. And we're talking about life and golf and how he played, who he's playing with, same thing. And I'd had a good round and I said, hey, man, I got to go. I hope you have great. He goes, I'll walk out with you. I'm finished too. So we're walking out. I said, have a great day. Maybe I'll see you again. And he says, yeah, Jay, hope you stay on the leaderboard, something like that. And he goes left and I go right. And my caddy looks at me and goes, how long have you known Justin Timberlake? And I said, who's Justin Timberlake? He goes, the dude you were just talking to is Justin Timberlake. And I go, oh, I just knew him as Justin. And we just had breakfast together. And he goes, oh, dude, he's in a boy band. And I go, well, that's why I don't know him. I don't know boy bands. I don't care. But then, Kelly, I have four daughters.
And oh, yeah.
Like, hey, guys, I had breakfast with this dude named Justin Timberlake. And my daughters were like, Dad, you are the worst. What are you talking about? You know, so that's part of the book. You know, that's just kind of how things came together.
Well, yeah, and it's the places that you ended up being, and just sometimes by happenstance, but also that's what you did as a career. So you had that opportunity to be around the Timberlakes and the Connerys of the world, right?
Yeah, I mean, just by the grace of God or good fortune, whatever it was. But I mean, you know, as it's happening to you, because I'm not a starstruck person, I'm really not.
Right.
But as I look back at it, I'm like, I don't know. You know, how that happened. It could have been, you know, just anybody. But the game has introduced me and my network of friends now because of golf is extensive. I mean, it's ridiculous. I dare any other profession or any other sport, you know, to rival that. And it's, you know, and it's been, there have been friendships, you know. It's not like, oh, yeah, who's that? It's just, you know, there's this bond that the game creates. It's just really super special.
Having a great time with former PGA Tour player Jay Delsing, whose new book, You Wouldn't Believe Me If I Told You, is out. By the way, I can order that. Our listeners can order that Amazon and bookstores, I would imagine, Jay?
Absolutely. You can go to my site, jaydelsinggolf.com, and get it. You can go to Mascot Books and get it. I call Amazon the cartel. Because they do whatever they want and they, you know, you got to have them. That's great. And they tell you what they're going to charge for the book. They tell you what you're going to make for the book. They tell you when you're going to get paid. But yes, you can get it at Amazon as well. It's part of the learning experience, Kelly. Kind of fun.
What I love about this book, you've already hit on Sean Connery and Justin Timberlake. It's unabashedly name dropping. And I think that's fabulous, right? And but from the very start of this, for goodness sakes, you have Jack Nicklaus writing the foreword. You have David Faraday writing the introduction. That's pretty strong golf-related company off the bat, Jay. How did that come to be?
Dude, I mean, I got as high as 52nd in the world. Nobody cares about anybody at 52nd in the world. That's, come on, man. I mean, I played golf with Jackie. And when I was at UCLA, he was at North Carolina. So Jackie and I have been friends forever. And he just said, yeah, I just said, you know, I wrote Jack. Jack came on my show and I asked him, I said, you know, do you think I'm writing this book and I'd be so honored? And he goes, yeah, when you need to buy. You know, it was like, what do you want me to put in there or give me? I mean, I was, really? And then Faraday has been a friend of mine for 25 years. He's one of my closest golf friends and I just love him. The stuff that he does with the Troops First and the amount of money that he raises, the wit that he has, he's just spectacular. And I know why he went to live, but I miss him because I'd love to see him in more of the mainstream version of golf. And reading his portion of that book is it takes you on a ride, man. It is fascinating.
His life is taking you on a ride, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's...
I had to make sure I was reading it. So like, okay, all right. Because whenever I get him on my show, Kelly, you know, we do radio and then we drop it as a podcast and he swears like a sailor. And then he always says to me, I'm so glad you're still on cable. And I'm like, you know, I'm not on, you know, so he loves to do that. So we just get to get the, we get the buzzer out all the time. But that's the beautiful thing about a book. It's just, he wrote it. We didn't clean it up. We just, you know, we made just a little grammatical changes and things like that. And we let it rip. So yeah, it was kind of fun.
We when we post this podcast, it is always audio, but you and I are on a Zoom call right now, and I'm looking behind you, and there's Detroit Tigers number 24 jersey. You grew up, your father was a major league ball player, played for several clubs, really good center fielder. Jake, talk a little bit about that, about growing up with a dad who played the big leagues, and also kind of your entree to golf in St. Louis.
Yeah, well, I mean, and this is where the blue collar thing comes in, and it's kind of a misnomer because, and even for my older sister, I have three older sisters, they actually traveled with my dad when my dad was playing. So they'd use winter ball and the Dominican and things like that. But the year I was born, my dad retired. And my dad grew up in a dairy farm in Wisconsin. And so anything was better than twice a day, every day, milk and cows and things like that. So started playing in D-class baseball and made his way to the big leagues, played for the 49 Yankees when they won the World Series. With his full share of the World Series winnings, he bought my mom's wedding ring. So it's really kind of a cool story. But
wow.
My little brother and I, Kelly, we never saw Dad play. We knew he played, but he sold advertising for a Catholic newspaper as when we were kids, and he did some odd jobs. And so the blue collar portion was my brother and I going to some churches with my dad on the weekends and helping him clean churches and things like that. My dad would do things like that for extra money. Back in the day, Kelly, those ball players that weren't named, you know, Stan Musial and Joe DiMaggio, those fellas all had jobs in the
U.S.
You know, so my dad was a really lousy carpenter and not a good plumber and did all sorts of odd jobs for people. God forbid they tried to use any of those things my dad would have fixed, because my dad was a hammer and a duct tape guy. And that was it. And I started thinking, oh, Dad, I hope you didn't put some pipes in for someone. They turn it on and there goes their bathroom. But that was kind of what that era was. My dad never made more than $18,000 playing golf. That's just what it was. A funny story. In 1949, Dad came up at the end of the year. Joe DiMaggio had some weird virus. My dad played center field, hit two home runs, drove in like eight RBI, and helped the Yankees overtake the White Sox. They were down by one game with two to play. They beat, they swept the Sox, win the pennant, go on and win the World Series. And, you know, a fellow named Art Richman was a general manager for the New York Yankees at the time. He calls my dad in December and says, he called him Jimmy. He says, Jimmy, we want you to play for the New York Yankees again next year. You know, my dad's contracts are year by year. And my dad said, hell, Art, I don't play for the Yankees forever. And he said, Jim, we're going to pay you $5,000. And my dad said, Art, is that negotiable? And he said, yes, take it or leave it. So, and the funny thing is, I was up playing in the Westchester Classic, Kelly, and I get on my locker, Art Richman is a member in Westchester, and on Yankee stationery, I get this note. I'm like, what Yankee is that? You know, and who the hell is Art Richman? I didn't, again, but no internet. You can't just pull this stuff up. You know,
I can't. What a different world.
Oh, Mark Richman is. So he leaves a number. I call him. We have dinner. Unbelievably nice guy. He tells me the story about, you know, I got to tell you the story about when we traded your dad. Your dad had batted like 30 or 40 times and got a base hit half the time. He was batting 500, but was never going to play because Joe DiMaggio was our center fielder. And he said, we are going to trade you to St. Louis. And my dad said, the Cardinals? He goes, no, the Browns. And the Browns were the worst team in baseball. And he said, you're going to get to play. And there's an unbelievable baseball family there that will take great care of you. Their names are the DeWitts. And Bill DeWitt Jr. is the current chairman and owner of the St. Louis Cardinals now. His dad was the general manager of the St. Louis Browns and Bill Veeck owned them. So the stories that have come full circle in my life from some of these things that my dad experienced were super, super cool. And you really can't make that stuff up, Kelly. It's just so odd.
And I've heard in terms of your getting into golf that your $200 for a kid playing golf in the summer went a long, long way. Is that right?
Oh, man, I saved my nickels, and we joined this place. They called it a country club, but it didn't have any bunkers. It was called North Shore Country Club, and I would, for $200, you could play all you wanted every day, and that was me. So my sisters would lifeguard at this pool that was down there, and I'd jump the fence, and I'd look for balls and, you know, just spend my time over there because I just wasn't loving the swimming portion of it. So that's kind of how I grew up, and the golf course was lousy. It was hilly and unkept. But, you know, Kelly, when you're out there and you don't know any better, it's like, this is fine. This just gives you an opportunity to go do it. And it's almost like you didn't really, and we weren't poor. We just didn't have a lot. And until I started getting out and started caddying over at Norwood Hills, which is this golf course in North St. Louis County over by the airport that actually hosts the PGA Tour Champions event now, which is insane. I was like, oh my gosh, there's sand traps and there's trees and there's all of these things. So I was just kind of learning on the fly, man. I'd started with my mom's clubs and I didn't know that it wasn't cool to have red woods until someone, those are ladies' clubs. I'm like, I don't care. And they're like, well, it says Louise Suggs on there. I said, no, it's not. It's Lou Suggs. And they're like, no, it's Louise Suggs. And so there were plenty of fights on the first tee over those things.
I want to ask you about a couple of particular stories, but as I mentioned early on, I love just some of the chapter names. For example, an icon and an arachnid. 4 days in Vegas is 2 days too many. Love the title. $1.1 billion can't buy $6 batteries, plus some fun with rules officials.
Yeah, right? Slugger White, just great, great human beings. Just wonderful people. And, you know, when you're out there as long as I was in, just weird situations arise, you know. And so I had a little fun with them a couple of times. And, you know,
that's your nature. Now, speaking of fun, would you talk a little bit about what sounds like literally pillowcases full of cash on the ground and John Daly? Am I getting that story somewhat correct?
John Daly is a great friend. And what I mean by that is if you ask John Daly for anything, he will give it to you. John, I need $28,432. He would give it to me. I need the shirt off your back. You ask John a question and he just lays it right out there. So John was from Arkansas and he'd come up to St. Louis when we were kids. So we knew each other. And, he had a barbecue when we were playing at Memphis. He had a home on the 16th fairway at Memphis, had a big red Arkansas Razorback point painted on the bottom of the pool. And he takes me, he goes, come here, man, I got to show you something. I'm thinking he's going to show me a trophy case, which I never saw. If he had a trophy case, I don't think he did. But, you know, no British Open trophy, no Wanamaker, no. But he takes me into his office and there's these trash bags. They're paper and they're, I don't know, 3.5 feet tall, 3 feet, however tall they are, just like you go when you go to the market.
Sure.
I'll have crumbled up $100 bills in there. Crumbled up. I said, JD, all this money. He goes, Tunica, man, I'm killing it. And I'm like, he's got all this money from gambling. And I don't know how much, I mean, Kelly, I don't know how much was in there, but when I had John on the Golf with Jay Delsing show, I asked him, how much have you lost, you think? And he goes, minimum $50 million. And he says it like it's
so matter of fact.
Yeah.
Jay, I got to know him a little bit during my time at the PGA. And yes, that there is that side to him for sure. For for him to be alive, Jay, is remarkable. He's basically had every vice that one could have in one's life. And still, now he's Santa Claus, of course. But and by the way, it was really cool to see his son play so well at the U.S. Amateur. That kid's got a lot of game.
Absolutely. Playing at Olympic Club, and I was texting John over that. It's a big deal because Olympic is a great track. You've got to hit a lot of shots to be able to get stuff done out at Olympic, and it's a great track. And you're right about John Daly. I mean, if you would have told me when after John won the PGA Championship and things were becoming more public about how he lived, if you were going to tell me how that John would still be alive in 2025, I'd say probably not. And pray he might say the same thing. I mean, I'm not speaking out of school. I mean, John just goes for it, man. He lives his life just like he plays golf, man. It's foot pedal to the metal.
So, Jay, let's continue with some of the other, what I think are just some great stories in the book, one of which is, for goodness sakes, a near fist fight almost breaks out at the Canadian Open at Glen Abbey. Jay Delsing, what in the world happened?
I'm a mild-mannered guy, Kelly. I got a long, long fuse. I get paired with Neil Lancaster and Scott Hoke at the Canadian Open this year, which is a tough draw. It's a tough draw. And we are on the ninth hole on Thursday. And you got to remember, back then, Jack Nicklaus had won every tournament except the Canadian Open. The Canadian Open was like a fifth major. They talked about that all the time. And anytime you can go to another country and compete for their national open, that's a big deal. That's a big deal. So that golf course was set up like a U.S. Open, Kelly. We're playing at Glen Abbey outside of Toronto in Oakville, Ontario. And we got high rough, really, really fast greens. The ninth hole's long at the time, probably 450-yard par four. The fairway kind of cut in from the right, and Scott had hit his ball to the left. Neil and I hit ours hard, but down the right a little bit, and both balls were in the rough. As we're walking to the balls are sitting literally 6 inches apart. Kelly, one ball is sitting up on a tee where it looks like, you know, you just placed it. You could hit any club you want off. The other was buried into the muff, and I'm thinking, who got the Delsing here? You know, so we look up there. Neil's ball's sitting good. Mine's. I said, Neil, I'm going to just identify. Neil's standing right next to me. I'm just going to identify this ball just to make sure. And he's like, no problem. Look at it. Put it back. Neil hits his ball on the green. I take my 60, wedge it out into the fairway, hit my ball on the green, and make a bogey. We're walking down the 10th hole. And Kelly, whenever things get a little off in your group, it's easy to tell. There's a natural flow, even with weird groups like playing with Scott and Neil. Just that some of them was off. So I said to Neil, what's going on? What's happening? And he goes, Scott says you cheated. And I'm thinking to myself, oh gosh, what did I do? Because you can easily break rules. What did I do? I'm not sure what. And he goes, he says that you didn't replace your ball in the rough when you chipped it out. And I said, what? He goes, I told him I was standing right there and you did. But he says you didn't. And I said, Neil, I chipped it out 10 feet straight sideways because the lie was so bad. He says he thinks you improved your lie. Ridiculous. Move on, right? So I play well. I had a good record up at Glen Abbey. Should have won that tournament a couple times anyways. And Neil and Scott are not playing particularly well. Neil is playing lousy. We got the next day. Neil plays two holes and quits. He goes home. Now I've got Scott Hoke. And I'm playing well. And we're coming up to the 18th hole. And I'm not saying Scott is one hell of a golfer. Okay. He's just something else. Of course. Anyway, so I hit my tee shot on the 18th hole at Glen Abbey, and I hit it, Kelly, in the same bunker to the right that Tiger Woods hit that incredible shot against Grant Waite in 2002, where he hit that shot to win the championship. And Kelly, as we walk off the tee, the heavens open up. I mean, we're not talking about dribbles and drives. We are talking about a deluge. By the time, Kelly, I get to the fairway, there's a river running down the middle of the fairway. By the time I get to be even with my ball, the sand traps are full of water. It is, you can't see 20 feet in front of you, and the horn goes off. So I'm with my caddy and I said, all right, so the process is this. Play is suspended. Now you got to mark your ball because when you come out, you got to replace it exactly where it is. And when you're in a bunker, they're going to come out and repair these bunkers. So there's a chance that if you put a coin in there, it's going to get washed away. If you put a tee in there, it's going to get. So you need to know exactly where this is by doing some, you know, triangulation. It's like, okay, we're even with this tree. We're right off this side of the bunker. And then you put marks there. So I have two tees in the sand, pick up my ball. It's dumping rain. My caddy's over. I'm walking to my caddy and Scott Oat from the other side of the fairway comes running towards me and says, oh my God, I can't believe you're cheating again. And I stop in my tracks and I'm like, so I just make a beeline right towards him. And I grab him by the collar and I said, what are you talking about? And he's like, you're not allowed to mark your ball in a sand trap. I can't believe you're cheating again. So we have a heated exchange, which we'll leave out, but there was plenty said. Now, I'll set the scene up. My caddy, his caddy, the only people left are a 12-year-old standard bearer. She's carrying the sign, and she's hearing all this, and like a 74-year-old woman who's our scorekeeper. And I'm right at the point. I can't take any more. And I look at this woman. I said, "Will you please call an official?" And she's trembling. Sure. And I said, "Please call an official right away." So you're up in Canada, Kelly. I know all the PGA Tour officials, and so does Scott. But who do we get? We get some random CPGA official, a Canadian. And so he comes up and he is like, what the hell is going on here? I've got Scott by the scruff of the neck. We're under one umbrella, uncomfortably close to each other. Yeah. And it was pouring down rain. And this guy comes in a cart and he says, can I help you? And I said, you can. I said, would you mind telling this, and I'll leave those other words out, that I am well within the rules of golf to mark my ball in the fairway bunker under suspension. And he goes, of course you are. And I look at him and said, thank you. And he's looking at me. He's looking at me. I go, you got to leave. You got to leave. And he's like, okay. And so I set the scorer and I set them ahead. And so it's just Scott and I under this umbrella. And I let him have it. I let him have it with, I did not hit him, but it was a verbal assault because I had heard crazy stories about this guy. And I always try to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. But sure. Kelly, you cannot question another man's integrity on the PGA Tour. If you are labeled as a cheater, you are fucked. It's so, Kelly, I'm at a 12. I am at a 12. I am running hot. My caddy goes, what? I go, you go home. We're done for the day. There's no way we're playing again tonight. So I go up in the clubhouse and I get back in the corner. And I've just got to, I need to unwind. You know, I'm not with anybody. I'm just trying to figure out what would compel him? He's been out on tour at least 5 years longer than I am. And he doesn't know the rules. And then, so I'm running this scenario through my head and I get this tap on my shoulder. And I look up, it's Scott Hoke's dad. And he said, I told him so many times to keep his mouth shut, but he just won't listen. And I said, you know, his dad was saying, like, I'm really sorry that happened. And because somewhere his dad found out or knew about it, was maybe he was following us off.
Did Scott himself ever say anything to you?
Oh, but no. And I didn't expect it. Scott doesn't have any sort of sense of awareness and stuff like that, Kelly. But there's no way. And you have to stand up for yourself out there, man. And so, I said to him something like, who goes off and tries to tell people they're breaking the rules when you don't know the damn rules yourself? Yeah. Like, what compels you to be such a, you know? And then it all went off the rails again.
Great story. All right, two more stories, and I've got a question to close this. Number one, Steve Pate, AKA the Volcano, I believe he was known as.
Human Volcano.
Right, the Human Volcano. He once marked his ball, Jay Delsing, in a rather unique style, correct?
Yeah, we were playing at Westlake out in about an hour north of LA, and this 18th hole at North Ranch was a bitch, Kelly. It was 450 yards long, OB on both sides, a lake in the front, and Pater is having a struggle. He hits one ball out to the left, one ball out to the right, another one out left, hits like an iron off the tee. His next shot in the water, goes up, drops it, hits his wedge in the water. He doesn't even know what he's like. Takes his wedge, breaks it in half, throws the head into the water, walks up to the green. Now the team is up around the green because he's coming in, and he takes the grip end that's left and stabs it right behind his ball and Marcus' ball. And we're all like, yeesh, Pater. And so he is fuming, trying to figure out. I think he made like an 11 or something. I mean, it was double figures. And we're looking at him like, are you okay? And he was one of those guys, he never got mad at anybody else. And he'd throw his clubs in the trunk, Kelly, and be like, hey, Kel, where do you want to go have dinner? And you're feeling kind of a little solo. Maybe you're like, I'm not going down with you. They have knives at the table. I'm not sitting down with you. You've got this switch that goes off in your head. You turn into some crazy person. So, Steve was remarkable at how some of the things he did and said. And but I will tell you, what a great player. But he was basically got on tour and named the Human Volcano. I remember I was playing in the Anheuser-Busch Golf Classic, and you know, you fly into either Norfolk or Richmond and then drive up, as you made that drive, Kelly, many times. And I'm with Mark Hayes, who is really conservative guy from Oklahoma and, you know, doesn't say anything. And I'm in the van with him, and I introduced myself to him. I've only been on tour for a year, you know, and I'm like, nice to meet you. And he says, are you friends with this guy, Steve Pate? I said, yes, sir. Went to college with him. Yep. Great guy. That's what I said. Because he is. Great guy. And he goes, you know, you should talk to him. I played with him several weeks ago, and his behavior embarrassed me. And I said, Mark, it's gotten better. That's what I said to him. He's headed in the right direction here. And Mark was like, what? And I was like, oh, yeah. It was way worse before.
Dave Delsing is our guest here on Musings on Golf. The book is You Wouldn't Believe Me If I Told You. One final story. I understand, Jay Delsing, that Tiger Woods, in the locker room one day, I don't know where, you can fill in the blanks, took off his shirt. And
we were playing at the TPC, I think it was in 2004, where he hadn't won yet, so he wasn't up in the champions locker room. So he's down there with the rest of us, and his locker is right next to mine. We're sitting there, friendly, the whole thing. And he takes his shirt off. I was like, really, dude? And he goes, yeah, I've gained, and you know, he's so proud of this, I've gained like 26 pounds without changing my waist size. And I'm like flipping him off. And I'm like, you know, because he looks like a linebacker. And here, I look like a retired mailman. I'm like, yeah, I walk for a living. I certainly don't lift anything, you know. And he's like, yeah, dude, and I am just crushing the ball. And I'm like, oh, just put your shirt back on, pal. Just cut it out. I mean, he just went from this spindly little whisper of a kid to, I mean, his shoulders were, I was, you know, in something like that, Kelly, we ain't seen anything like that.
No, not at all.
I mean,
it's a unicorn that way, right? There just didn't exist otherwise.
I mean, Gary Player started lifting weights, but Gary Player was still wispy. He was slight. Tiger's not slight. And we hadn't seen this. And I mean, look at what the golf looks like on the PGA Tour now, Kelly. It's all Tiger.
They're all athletes, right?
Oh, absolutely. They're all fit. I mean, Harry Hall didn't look so fit when I saw him. But most of the guys are so fit, especially the American guys. Crazy. Well, look at Rory. Rory was a little punchy guy. Look at Rory. Looks like, you know, there's no body fat on him. He needs to come over to my house, eat some cookies.
There you go. Hey, before we close with a question I asked every week, tell me about the hole-in-one that you made on a par four.
So, yeah, I've been fortunate. Well, I just had a lot of opportunities. I've made 20 hole-in-ones in my life, and I'm playing in an outing up in Toronto, outside of Toronto, with a dear friend, Bruce Rafuse, and his company was called Ferrero. They made Ferrero Rochers and they made Kinder eggs and all of this. They were confectionery. They also owned Tic Tacs. Okay, so they're all in the confectionery business. Bruce and I became great friends from meeting him, like I mentioned earlier, in a pro-am on the PGA Tour at Glen Abbey. And so we're playing a course called Greystone up near the escarpment. It's probably about 25 or 30 minutes north of Glen Abbey. And I'm playing with some of Bruce's customers, and we're going along. And the 15th hole is a 300-and-something-yard downhill par four. I've only played the course two or three times, and I driver was too much because it goes up the hill, that downhill, Kelly, and swings hard to the left. There's bunkers and everything around there. And for whatever reason, this hole, my group was just struggling. Our balls were flying backwards and left and right. And I was hurting the cats and we were moving forward. And I had a good round go. Believe it or not, I shot the course record that day. I shot 62, but I was 6 under par at the time. And one of the fellows that I was riding with in the cart was very much plugged into that. And he goes, "Well, where's your ball?" And I'm like, "Don't worry about my ball. Let's just go. He goes, "No, you're having a good day." I go, "We're fine. We're fine. Let's just keep this thing going because this is just an outing that I put together. There's not a bunch of other tour players there." So I was at the left greenside bunker picking. I'm like, "Do you want to hit this one anymore?" The guy's like, "Uncle, I surrender." So I picked this ball up. And I'm walking across the green, and a guy goes, "Well, I'm going to go look in the hole." And he goes, "Are you playing a Titleist 2? And I said, "I am." And Titleist 2, right in the hole. And I'm like, "Oh, you're 9 under par now." And I'm like, "That's crazy." And I wound up birdie in the last hole, which was a par 5, and shot 62 that day. But, yeah, that was one of those things, Kelly. Had it been up to me, I wouldn't have even looked. You know, I was like, let's
keep it moving.
Keep them breathing. We get in, have some lunch, and get this thing going. So, yeah, it was pretty special. They put a monument out there for me. They were kind enough to do that.
Jay Delsing, final question is along the lines of a dream golf foursome. If you could play with three other individuals, whether they are still with us or deceased, it could be tour players, it could be friends, family, three other individuals to round out your dream foursome, who would they be? And where would you play that round of golf?
Oh, man, that is a great question. First of all, my dad has been gone for 20-something years. He'd be in there.
Yeah.
My brother, who's my best friend in the whole world, oh, that's emotional, will be there for sure. My fourth, oh, boy. You know, my dad's favorite baseball player was Lou Gehrig. I don't even know if the Iron Horse, I don't know if he ever played golf or not, but it might be that.
Well, let's say he did. Let's just say he did.
He's such a thrill for my dad, you know? So,
yeah.
Plus for me, I mean, I'm a baseball junkie. And where would we play? Oh, my gosh. You know, Kelly, my first thought was go play that dump that we grew up on, you know, down in North County. But why would we do that? Because we already did that. I mean, let's go to Augusta, man.
Yeah, there you go.
Go to Augusta. Hang out with the boys, you know, and show them what it looks like.
Hey, by the way, in your opinion, what's the best baseball movie?
Oh, Bull Durham. I love Bull Durham just because I can relate to some of those stories. So when I was 10 years old, my dad took me to a baseball writer's luncheon, and Whitey Herzog was there, and Whitey was managing the Cardinals. And these guys, and I took it all in, Kelly, they didn't even speak English. You know, they were grunting and saying, "Did you see that guy's fastball?" It was like, choop. And it was, you know, and My dad said one of the funniest stories I ever heard my dad tell the story when he was facing Bob Feller, and he noticed that he got to the clubhouse and he was in the lineup, but all the other regulars were out. "Oh, I got a sore hamstring. Because nobody wanted to face, you know, the great Bob Feller because he hit." And my dad said he got up there the first time and pitch came in and the umpire said, "Strike one." And my dad said, "That sounded inside." He's like, "I didn't see it. I don't know where it went." So,
right, I sounded. That's good.
But, you know, Kelly, there was just such a more romantic side of the game back then. So I think I would have absolutely loved it. But that's a great question.
Tell us again with the book is available through Amazon. You wouldn't believe me if I told you. It's just out. Amazon and There are some, I would imagine, is maybe a Barnes & Noble? Are there bookstores that are carrying it as well?
Absolutely. Barnes & Noble is carrying it. You can go to my website, jdelsongolf.com. You can go to mascotbooks.com and get it there as well. Just about anywhere you find books, you should be able to get it. We're in the process of getting that all those fulfilled. So, yeah, that should work.
Hey, Jay, this has been great. And I'm glad that Will got you to get this book. And it really is it's a fabulous read. And as I said early on, it's a very different approach. And that's what makes it cool. Though I love the word unforgettable because you have so many unforgettable anecdotes and stories in this, Jay.
Well, and I'm not trying to be a name dropper per se, but I mean, that's what golf provided. It just, and so I'm the recipient on a lucky end of some of these stories. And the game is just, on the show, we talk about it all the time, Kelly, as being a societal powerhouse, because golf, when you need something, you go to golf. It raises money. It does the right thing. I mean, Jack and Barbara Nicklaus have raised over $300 million with Play Yellow since 2004. It's ridiculous. And so I'm honored to be the chairman of the Play Yellow chapter here in the Midwest. And we've got these sick kids that, you know, come to Top Golf when we have this event, and they're smile on their faces and we go play golf and it helps them.
When's the event?
It's November 10th this year.
November 10th at Top Golf in St. Louis?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That is great. Yeah. Jay Delsing, this has been an absolute treat. Thank you for your time and for this book that, you know, in the old days I would tell people, you know, run, don't walk. But in this case, just log on somewhere. Go to Jay Delsing Golf. Just go to Amazon, buy this book. You're going to have a blast reading it. Jay Delsing, thanks again.
Oh my gosh, Kelly, it's my honor. Your show is great. I love listening to it. The thing you guys did with Rich Lerner, oh man, Coach Mike Smalls, did Smalley, great stuff, man. And John McGinnis, the best guy in the whole world. He is
awesome guy.
He's the best guy. So thanks for putting me in that great company. I'm honored.
William & Harry has entered a bold new era, led by their new Lionhead logo, a symbol of strength, leadership, and fearless ambition. Step onto the course with purpose. Outplay the field and dominate your opponent. While wearing handcrafted shoes that blend performance, luxury, and unmistakable style, William & Harry offers custom designs featuring your club, company, or organization's logo so you stand out with every step. Visit williamandharry.com and use code 15OFFMOG for 15% off. William & Harry, walk with the lion. Well, we thank Jay Delsing very much for that lively, spirited interview. Hope he sells a lot of books. Hope you all consider getting that, whether through Amazon or at your local bookstore. Jay is, he's quite the character. Thank you, Jay. Appreciate your time. Best of luck with everything you're doing in the St. Louis market. Let's talk for just a couple of minutes, folks, about two very well-known names. Really happy, as I said, going in to the interview for Xander Schauffele, his victory at the Baycourt Classic in Japan on Sunday was long, long overdue. He really hadn't played particularly well, let's just be honest, this year. And he found a way to get it done playing in front of his maternal grandparents. How cool is that? To be able to win, obviously a lot of connections back to Japan for Xander, and one-stroke victory at Yokohama Country Club over Max Gracerson, who, interestingly enough, was the runner-up at this same tournament last year. So Max obviously has had a nice year, and look for more from him, but happy to see Xander back in the winner's circle. Golf is better off. The PGA Tour is better off with Xander Schauffele playing well. Not sure you're going to see Tiger Woods anytime soon, but I guess it depends on who you talk to and the point of view. His seventh back surgery last Friday, basically they installed an artificial disc implanted. It's a lumbar disc replacement. And, you know, he didn't play in 2025 after undergoing surgery to repair a ruptured Achilles tendon in March. I keep going back to the massive car accident outside of Los Angeles in February of 2021 when he shattered that ankle, and all the pressure you put on an ankle in a golf swing, whether he'll ever fully recover from that. Some doctors have said for this particular issue with the lumbar disc that he could, that he possibly might be able to play in December, 2 months out from now, in his own Hero World Challenge and the PNC Championship with his son, Charlie. We'll see. Tiger Woods again on December 30th. Same date, birthday, by the way, as three great athletes in the history of this country. Sandy Koufax, LeBron James, and Tiger Woods, all born on December 30th. Different years, obviously. But Tiger turns 50 on December 30th, and you just have to wonder, how much more do you put yourself through on this? Remains to be seen. Frankly, I'm skeptical that you're going to see Tiger Woods after a lumbar disc replacement surgery in October back on the golf course in December, but stranger things have happened. Well, again, we thank Jay Delsing. Next week is World Series time, and my good buddy, my golfing partner, Tommy Hutton, the longtime analyst for the Miami Marlins. Tommy played for both the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Philadelphia Phillies. He's going to join us to break down the impending World Series and also talk about his passion and love for the game of golf. Again, for Janice Self, who just has to get this interview done so she can get back on the course and on the range to hit more balls. She's got the bug again. Kelly Elbin signing off. Thanks for joining us on Musings on Golf.